get ready for an hour of fishing, hunting, and outdoor events from all over the great state of Alabama. It's time for Alabama's Great Days Outdoors Radio Show. Join Joe Baia with Great Days Outdoors Magazine and his special guests as they bring you the latest weekly updates from the woods and the water. Alabama's Great Days Outdoors is brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Now, here's Joe Baia.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Great Days Outdoors Radio Show, where we bring you fishing reports from around the state of Alabama, and we go in-depth to cover the topics that matter to the Southern hunter and angler. I'm Joe Baia, and I'm joined today with my good buddy Butch Theory. We've got a great show lined up for you. A little later in the show, we're going to be talking with Clint Flowers all about making money selling land. But before we get there, let's get right into the fishing reports and talk with Wayne Miller on the Mobile Tensaw Delta. Captain Wayne, where you been this week?
Oh man, I'll tell you what, I'm right here on the Delta. I hadn't run away yet. It's been some pretty tough conditions, but actually still been catching some pretty decent fish. So, it's looking up. We've got, even though the rivers are still high and muddy, I mean, we got conditions right now that are improving. I mean, the water's falling and it's going to take a while, but it'll clean up. So, everything from the freshwater side on the Delta is looking in pretty good shape for the next, two or three weeks, hopefully.
Well, typically, now this hasn't been a typical year, but typically this time of year, as we get, kind of into January, getting into February, sometimes it's the coldest time of the year, but what kind of patterns do you usually see in the Delta?
And we've talked about this over the last, month, but, it's not a mystery from the standpoint of where the fish are. When we look at the bass population, they early in the fall and on into the late fall, they migrate into the creeks adjacent to the bays. And they stack up in those creeks, and that's where they stay all winter long. So, even though we've had tough conditions, it's not, we know where the fish are. So we're at a tremendous advantage there. But one of the challenges that we've had, and one thing that's really been unique about this January, is we've had some really cold water temperatures. Now, typically what we see here, we'll have some nights where it gets down pretty cold, but most of the time our water temperature stays in the low to upper 50s. And we've had quite a few days where we've had water temperature in the mid 40s. And that is really cold for the Delta. And, with it being a lot of it stained water, that complicates it even further. And, one thing that it does that I really, try to emphasize to people is it makes presentation so much more critical from the standpoint of speed and how you have to trigger bites from these fish. I know a few days ago, me and a good friend of mine were out, and we saw quite a few people fishing, but hardly anybody was catching fish. But I saw most people, and the water temperature was a little below 50 degrees. Most people I saw were really fishing too fast. So depending on the type presentation, the type baits you're using, in that particular day, we were throwing a lot of, we were throwing shaky heads and we were really having to just basically drag them. And, that was the only way that we could get those fish, to bite them, because any type of aggressive movement or trying to swim, the fish just, that they would not react on it.
That was going to be my next question, Mr. Wayne, or Captain Wayne, is with those colder water temperatures and the colder air temperatures, what is your favorite bait? Or would you, throw something different now as opposed to a couple of months ago up there?
Well, my favorite bait this time of year, if you have clear water, is deep diving crankbaits and jerkbaits, because typically you can get reaction strikes. And with these fish being stacked up, once you trigger a bite, you almost get into like a schooling scenario where If you can ever get one or two of those fish, you know, on a ledge or something to hit a moving bait like that, you can really pick them apart. You know, you can catch a lot of them.
Get them into a feeding frenzy.
Yeah, the combination of extremely cold water and the sustain from all the high water, high muddy water has eliminated that hard bait bite. I mean, it's, you know, there's nothing I would love more than to go out and catch them on those type techniques and presentations, but it just isn't happening. So you're pretty much forced to you know, fall back on plastic, which is what most fishermen do.
Well, Captain Wayne, you talked in the past about using those crankbaits to find fish and then switching over to plastic, but since that's not an option, what kind of, if you're in these creeks, what types of structure or what types of features in these creeks would you look for to pitch one of these plastics into?
You know, one thing that was critical, that has been critical over the last few days, has been just, and I think it's primarily due to the water temperature, has been the depth. And what I've been doing is using my electronics and, you know, primarily focusing on the, you know, the outside swings of these creeks, you know, the outside bends, and, you know, just easing along and really paying close attention to where I'm seeing those fish on my electronics. And, you know, when you get into a swing where you catch, you know, you may catch four or five fish in a big outside bend, and you'll, you know, what I've noticed this past week was, if they're in like, if it's like 6 to 8 feet of water and the next swing you go into is only 5 feet, you know, I basically wouldn't catch anything. So that water depth was critical. So what I started doing was just running those water depths. You know, I wouldn't spend any time on that shallower water.
Man, we sure appreciate the report and pointing us in the right direction. We will check back in with you next week. Stay safe out there.
Okay, guys. Have a great one.
All right, Butch. I always like to hear what old Captain Wayne has to say. That dude catches some bass. Let's take a trip a little further north. We're going to be talking with Brad Whitehead today, see what's going on Pickwick Lake and Wilson Lake, and maybe he's even been on the Bear Creek chain of lakes. Brad, where you been, man?
Man, we have been actually been on the road a lot, been doing these fishing shows. We got some geared up for the next couple of weeks, and we've also been on Wilson, done a little bit on Pickwick, but we've been keying on those crappie. I'm trying to get away from the bass now. It's getting crappie time, so I've been up on Wilson shooting some ducks.
Okay, so shooting docks. Tell me a little bit about your setup there. What's been going on? What's been working?
Well, a lot of people, they look at you when you say you've been shooting docks, and they really don't know, you know, what you're talking about. And it's a fairly easy way to catch fish. What happens is, this time of year, the docks on the lakes, you know, there's nobody around them, there's nobody banging into them, there's no kids jumping off into the water, and these fish a lot of times will congregate, get up under these docks and feed on shad. And it's a great way to pull, you know, to go from dock to dock. It's you know, some docks will hold them, some will don't. You just kind of have to trial and error deal. But you simply just take a 5 or 6 foot rod, light line, 6 pound test line, and actually, as they say, shoot the jig up under the dock and let it fall. And it's amazing to hit when these fish come out from under the docks, what kind of strike you get on that rod.
Now, when these crappie hit, are they hitting it majority of the time on the fall, or are you having to jig it back out to get the strike?
Oh, no. You make one shoot. You pull your jig back and actually shoot it like you were a bow up under the dock, and then you engage the reel and you let it fall. You know, you can use 4 pound test line, but I like 6. And I like high vis, so you're able to see it. A lot of times you'll just see the line move. You'll see it bounce, and the fish is on it. And it's a neat way to, you can cover a lot of territory on this technique, because you usually pull up, you make 2 or 3 casts. If they're not there, they're not going to hit it. But you're covering the whole water column. Some of these fish will be in 6 foot. Some of the fish will be in 16 feet. But you're able to cover that water column shooting it one time. It'll tell you. It don't take long.
Well, what about jigs? What size jig are you using, and do you mix it up? Is there anything to that?
You do. Now, Wilson is a deep lake. You know, close to the dam, you're talking 89 to 90 feet of water. So a lot of these docks are sitting in 30 to 45 foot of water. So what I try to do, I'll keep two rods rigged up. I'll keep one with a 1/32. I'll keep one with a 1/16. And you don't think that makes a big difference, but it does. Of course, your wind plays a big factor. Sometimes you got to go to an 1/8. But the 1/16 is usually the key deal. Now, as far as rigging it, I like what they call a crappie magnet. It's made by Leland Lures. It's a slab magnet that works real good. It's just a dead fall bait. It's really no action to it. And those fish, with being in that cold water, they're not going to go far. But when they hit it, they're going to strike it. And you're subject to catch anywhere from 15 to 25 crappie off of one pier.
Wow. All right, Brad. Well, we're going to change it up a little bit this week. Butch and I also host the Alabama Saltwater Fishing Report. And we do a little thing over there that we get a tip every week from each of our contributors. So we want to bring that over to the freshwater side. And so give us a little tip for Lake Wilson. What's really helping you guys right now on the lake?
Well, these, what I'm fixing to tell you, you can buy them at any bait store. You can buy them at one of the big chain stores and the sporting goods. They're called crappie niblets. They have different colors. Most of them's really, really small. They're about the size of a eraser. And you slide it over your hook. It's got a smell like no other. I can't describe it. I don't know what it is, but it works. This time of year, if you go shooting docks and you're not catching the numbers that you want to catch, try one of those niblets. Just slide it over the hook. It's only going to last for 2 or 3 minutes. And put it, you know, you'll have to keep putting new ones on there. But give that a try. I think you'll find out you'll catch an extra few fish, if you give that a try.
All right, Brad. Well, tell me a little bit about these shows you got coming up. Where can we find you?
Well, this weekend we'll be at Bass Pro Shops in Leeds, Alabama. We'll be there on Friday night at 7. We'll be there on Saturday at 10 and 2. And then we'll be traveling to Huntsville, Alabama at the Cabela's, same time, 7 o'clock on Friday, 10 and 2 on Saturday. So come on out. It's going to be fun. We're going to have a lot of door prizes, and we're going to talk fishing. We can talk crappie. We can talk smallmouth. We'll talk brim. Just come on out for a good family night, and let's talk a little fishing.
All right, Brad Whitehead. Thanks, Brad. Stay safe out there, man. Thank Stay
you.
Warm.
All right. See you guys.
Folks, y'all stick around. After this, we got more fishing reports.
Great Days Outdoors magazine is Alabama's leader in hunting and fishing information. Each month, you'll see a variety of articles from small game to big game, hunting and fishing. They even have game and fish recipes each month. Learn the latest tactics for hunting and fishing. From polywogs to gator trout, they've covered your outdoors for over 20 years, specializing in how-to articles written by the best Alabama writers. Whatever your game, include Great Days Outdoors in your strategy. Subscribe online at greatdaysoutdoors.com and visit them on Facebook.
Dolphin Island Marina at the foot of the Dolphin Island Bridge is situated conveniently between the Intercoastal Waterway and Mobile Bay. Wet and dry slips are available at this 235-slip marina with all the amenities you need. Kayak, paddleboard, and pontoon boat rentals are available, as well as a restaurant and South Mobile County's best live bait shop. Dolphin Island Marina is a great starting point for your vacation adventure, whether coastal cruising or fishing, from your boat or with one of their professional charter captains. You'll find it all at Dolphin Island Marina on Dolphin Island at the foot of the bridge.
Right now, Trotter Marine in Saraland is selling Triton and Crestliner all-alumina boats at cost, plus rigging. That's right, you can get a new Triton or Crestliner boat at their cost, plus the cost to set it up with an engine and rigging. Financing is also available for qualified buyers, so you can get your new boat with an affordable monthly payment. Trotter Marine also offers a complete line of truck accessories, including floor mats, toolboxes, rain guards, and more. Trotter Marine, Highway 43 in Saraland. Call 251-679-5959 or visit TrotterMarineLLC.com.
If you own a business in Alabama and want to reach the outdoors market with advertising on Alabama's Great Days Outdoor Radio Show, call 877-314-1237. Our show reaches all over Alabama, and your message will reach your targeted market. Radio ads can be combined with ads in Great Days Outdoors magazine and reach an even larger audience. Call 877-314-1237 to get all the details. That's 877-314-1237 or visit greatdaysoutdoors.com today.
Welcome back to Alabama's Great Days Outdoors with Joe Baia, brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Once again, here's Joe.
All right, Butch, we've got Captain Scott Kennedy on the line. Scott is going to be giving us the onshore report this week. Does most of his fishing from a kayak. Can't wait to hear what he has to say. What's been hot this week, Scott?
I tell you, this week it's been all sheephead. That spring, kind of early spring spawn bite is really starting to kick off. We've had some good trips this week, catching some real quality fish. And that's what a lot of our time this week has been on the sheephead.
So you're doing majority of your fishing. We call this the onshore report. So I'd say you're land based, but you're using a kayak still to go after these fish. So what kind of structure are you finding them on right now?
Lately we've been fishing a lot of old pier pylons, any kind of old bridge pylons you can find, any kind of just big concrete clusters are real good. But I've been focusing a lot on pier pylons, kind of, you know, staging around the bay out at the mouth of these tidal rivers and stuff. And just trying to find the biggest cluster of them I can and then put myself just right in the middle of it.
Still using those fiddler crabs for the best bait?
Oh, yeah. Fiddler crabs is by far my preferred. With the colder weather, it's been a little tougher to find them, but we've still been able to get a hold of them. And, that's definitely my preferred bait.
It's great. A couple of redfish mixed in, I saw.
Yeah. We've still been doing our kind of, afternoon thing. We'll spend the midday chasing the sheephead, and kind of once the afternoon's getting, the sun's starting to peak down a little bit and it's gotten plenty of sunlight on the water, we've been chasing the redfish. And we've been getting on some pretty good ones there too. A lot of rats mixed in, but if you wade through the smaller reds, you can find some really good upper slots as well.
Scott, how does water quality affect your fishing? Is it having an effect on sheep's head right now?
I tell you, it's been kind of, hadn't really seemed to affect it a whole lot. There's been a couple of days we fished, the water's been pretty dirty, and we've still been getting some bites. It's a little bit slower, but not too much of a difference. And we've had days where it's clean water, and we've done really good on them those days as well.
When it comes to structure, let's say you're approaching some bridge pylons or dock pylons. If you've got some current, maybe the tide's going out or in, or maybe you're fishing in one of the passes. When you have some current, do you find that those fish will orient to the structure depending on that? Like, would they be on the eddy side, or are they all around it? Anything to that?
I usually prefer to fish the eddy side. A majority of that has to do with just being in the kayak, and it's a little easier to hold position. But, we get plenty of bites on the edges as well. It seems like it's easier to hold your bait and your kayak and everything on that down current eddy side. It's been the best spot for me, at least.
Well, let's talk about tackle a little bit. I'm guessing you're using a Carolina rig.
No, actually, I've been just using a double split shot rig. I'll just get a real small hook, maybe a size one or two hook, and then, tie that on to your leader line. And then maybe, 12 inches above the hook, I put two split shots. And I like to go finesse for them. I feel like the bigger ones, they've been around for a while. They've gotten smart to those Carolina rigs and everything. So I like to scale it down and finesse for them a little bit more.
All right, that's Scott Kennedy. Scott, thanks for the report.
All right, Joe, we're going to head on over to the Miller's Ferry area and see what Mr. Joe Dunn's been doing. How are we doing, Mr. Joe?
Oh, pretty good. We've been dealing with a lot of up and down water right now, and it's still a little bit on the high side, but it's going to get better. So if we want to go fishing, that's the thing, get out in those rough conditions and learn how to catch fish when it's hard. And this is definitely a harder time right now with that colder water and high muddy water, but over at Miller's Ferry right now you can still find some clear water up in some of the creeks and in the main channels of the sloughs and all, but typically this time of year, after you've had those high waters, a lot of the fish are going to push up in there and stage up and down those creeks. They're looking forward, they know the spawn is coming, but they're getting out of that water, and they're waiting on that water temperature to change right now, and they're just going to be suspended right now.
Joe, on Miller's Ferry, what time of year do you really see a spawn?
That's going to usually, starting around mid to late March. You know, everybody typically thinks it's a little bit earlier when that air temperature warms up and we see some of those pretty days and a day or two of, 70 degree weather. Like we got some coming up. I've been watching in the forecast coming up the next week or so. We're going to get some of those days, three or four of them. But you got to remember that's air temperature. It may feel good to you, but that water temperature is still going to be cold, cold, cold. And it takes a long time for it to warm on up. And you have to have actually, some warmer nights to get that to change. So typically it's going to be, mid to later March. And let me back up on another thing too. It depends on the slough. We have typically two or three sloughs over at Miller's Ferry that's going to warm up early. And that'll be the ones that you can go to catch some along the banks in that mid to late March. And then later on, it'll be some more of them, but you just have to watch that water temperature. Once it goes to getting into that 58 to 60, where they're going to start. And the thing too with crappie is they don't all go to the bank at the same time. You'll have a few trickle in and then they'll trickle out in some more. So you'll have some in both stages there for a little while. So that's what I tip.
There's a really good article coming up in the February issue of Great Days Outdoors about when crappie spawn and really how to target them before, during, and after the spawn.
Exactly.
Some interesting research about crappie spawning habits and what causes them to spawn and how it's different and it completely changes on the body of water. And it's interesting to hear you say that about the sloughs being different one to the other, even just on one, one impoundment like Miller's Ferry. That's really neat to see. It's almost like the whitetail rut in Alabama. You got different areas do different things and everybody kind of knows their area. When it comes to those crappie right now, I know it's tough conditions, but what kind of tactics are you using to be able to catch some fish?
Right now, the best, like I said, they're going to be suspended, most of them, in those channels, or they'll be hanging around some structure in that 10 to 12 foot or deeper. And either you can troll up and down the edge of those channels, or either you can bottom bounce, like we do out in the river, but get on the edge of that channel and bottom bounce from, 10 to 15 feet. Just keep working through there using your electronics to hunt your structure. And typically that's just going to be, there's really no other way to do it right now because of that cold water, that's where they're going to be. And the best methods I find to find them right now.
All right, Joe. Well, let's talk about a tip this week. What do you got for us on Miller's Ferry?
Well, typically, like I said, and this is the hardest time to figure out the bite exactly. We're fooling with suspended fish, and especially if you're going to be bottom bouncing, because what you need to be feeling for, you don't feel that thump, like we love to feel usually crappie fishing, but you don't have that this time of year. A lot of times, the line will either just get light or when you're bottom bouncing and you come up on a limb and kind of your leg gets hung there for a second. Well, sometimes the bite will be the same. You don't know which is which. So best thing is just go ahead and try to set the hook and then hopefully it'll be a crappie. But I've had a lot of guys fishing with me and they're in the back and I'm not getting them. I don't feel them, this, another. And in a few minutes, they'll pull the men up and he'll be beat all to death. Done had his eyes knocked out. They've been getting the bite. They just didn't know what they were looking for, for that feel. And that's what I typically tell everybody. If it feels like, go ahead and give it a good little pop. Hopefully you got a crop.
All right, Joe. Well, thanks for your report this week, man. Good tip. Folks, y'all stick around. After the break, we're going to be talking with Clint Flowers all about how to make money selling land.
Great Days Outdoors magazine is Alabama's leader in hunting and fishing information. Each month, you'll see a variety of articles from small game to big game, hunting and fishing. They even have game and fish recipes each month. Learn the latest tactics for hunting and fishing. From polywogs to gator trout, they've covered your outdoors for over 20 years. Specializing in how-to articles written by the best Alabama writers. Whatever your game, include Great Days Outdoors in your strategy. Subscribe online at greatdaysoutdoors.com and visit them on Facebook.
Dolphin Island Marina at the foot of the Dolphin Island Bridge is situated conveniently between the Intercoastal Waterway and Mobile Bay. Wet and dry slips are available at this 235-slip marina with all the amenities you need. Kayak, paddleboard, and pontoon boat rentals are available, as well as a restaurant and South Mobile County's best live bait shop. Dolphin Island Marina is a great starting point for your vacation adventure, whether coastal cruising or fishing, from your boat or with one of their professional charter captains. You'll find it all at Dolphin Island Marina on Dolphin Island at the foot of the bridge.
Right now, Trotter Marine in Saraland is selling Triton and Crestliner all-alumina boats at cost, plus rigging. That's right, you can get a new Triton or Crestliner boat at their cost, plus the cost to set it up with an engine and rigging. Financing is also available for qualified buyers, so you can get your new boat with an affordable monthly payment. Trotter Marine also offers a complete line of truck accessories, including floor mats, toolboxes, rain guards, and more. Trotter Marine, Highway 43 in Saraland. Call 251-679-5959 or visit TrotterMarineLLC.com.
If you own a business in Alabama and want to reach the outdoors market with advertising on Alabama's Great Days Outdoor Radio Show, call 877-314-1237. Our show reaches all over Alabama, and your message will reach your targeted market. Radio ads can be combined with ads in Great Days Outdoors magazine and reach an even larger audience. Call 877-314-1237 to get all the details. That's 877-314-1237 or visit greatdaysoutdoors.com today.
Hi, this is Shaw Grigsby, and you're listening to Alabama's Great Days Outdoors Radio.
Welcome back to the show. You know, ever since I was a little kid, I've wanted to own my own piece of land and be able to hunt my own piece of land. And really, to make that dream a reality, you've got to be able to make land a good investment. So today, we're bringing back Clint Flowers onto the show with National Land Realty. Clint is my broker over at National Land, and this guy has sold more land than anybody else in the country. And so he really knows what it takes to not only market a piece of land effectively, be able to sell a piece of land, but also all the different aspects that come into play in land ownership and being able to generate income off that land to make it a good investment. So, you know, Clint, you and the Gulf Coast Office of National Land Realty have been the top producing office, and yourself the top producer nationwide for the last 3 years running. Tell me a little bit about volumes. What does that mean as far as a production for National Land?
Well, our group as a whole statewide sold over $161 million in land last year, just in 2018. And we've got five offices in the state, as well as more. And I think we're up to almost 25 states now, and looking forward to further expansion.
So one of the good things about National Land is that when it comes to different types of land, we really have run the gamut as far as the different ways you can make money on land, whether it's timberland or farmland, recreational properties, all the way down to folks that are installing solar. We've done a little bit of all of it. So, you know, when we talk about being able to make money on land, what's the first thing that you look at when you're talking to somebody who owns land, when you're talking to somebody who's looking to buy land? Where do you start?
Well, I try to explain to everybody that cheap land is not always good land. Many times you get what you pay for, and understanding what really comprises value on a piece of property is extremely important, because, I mean, this is just like a garden at home. You know, the better the soils and the more you put into it, nutrition-wise, the more it's going to produce for you. And so if you don't understand that, you just walk out there and have become an internet expert on land within, you know, 30 minutes, and you think all land sells for X or between X and Y dollars per acre, then it's a good way to lose a lot of money and do so quickly.
Yeah, and, you know, I think there's probably two groups that we can lump people into, really, when it comes to making money. It's you've either got folks that are looking for short-term gains or folks that are looking for long-term gains. So let's talk about short-term gains a little bit. What kind of things is somebody going to do if they're wanting to make money in a shorter time frame? What are they going to use land for? How would they do that?
Well, and to clarify for our conversation today, there's a lot of intrinsic value to me on a piece of property of using it with my family and friends and kids. And it's hard for me to put a value on that for other people. So we're going to stay away from it and just talk about pure investment. And for short-term guys, that's more about sweat equity. So if you think about a fixer-upper on a house, you'd be talking about adding roads, food plots, water features, if that's feasible. You know, anything that helps you get in and see and utilize a piece of property better, but doing it in a cost-effective way.
So to make it analogous back to a home, you know, it's the guy who goes and he sees a home that needs new coat of paint, maybe needs some updating and some things so that the next buyer down the line can see that value immediately. Really, it's forcing appreciation on that property. What other things besides, say, those aesthetic features or those recreational components, what else can somebody do as far as a short term to make a property more valuable?
If you've got a timberland tract that's been moderately managed or not managed at all, that you can help get it into production in general or to a higher level production through, you know, understory management, burning, spraying, might even include a full site prep and planning, you know, take it bare and start over and properly stock it and you know, do things like that to help the long-term value of the stand of timber on the track, which is may not be important to you if you're planning on being a short-term owner, but it will help you sell the property to people who are looking for long-term investments. So what it does is it increases the size of your buyer pool for that piece of property.
Well, you talk about timber a lot. I know that timber's king in the South and definitely in South Alabama, but you know, what about agricultural land? So, is there anything you can do there, with ag land for a short term, gains?
Typically what we see there is you want a change of use. So the easiest example I've encountered is, you know, old fallow pasture that may be in an area where row crop is in high demand, and it's a tract that would convert well topography-wise into row crop. So we've gone in, you know, removed or gotten rid of the grass there, converted it, worked with the farmer, and over about a year to two-year period, get it converted to row crop, and it took the rents on that property from about $25 an acre up to, depending on what market you're in, anywhere from $40 to $150 an acre for row crop. And as we've heard, there's even a few examples of higher than that. But that typically is the range for our part of the state. Again, depending on where you are, number of farmers, competition, things like that. But at a minimum, you've doubled your rent rate, plus or minus a few dollars, all within a 1 year to 2 year period. So now you can use that cash flow to sell it on, the same way you would sell a rental property of any kind. It's most of your true investors are basing value on the income stream. So if you increase that income stream, you can now sell it at a higher price.
Right. And anything for that matter. I mean, businesses are the same way. It's those future income. Future income is what's going to establish the purchase price for purely an investment. Well, we talk about short-term gains a lot, and that's certainly an interesting angle. You know, a lot of guys I know are, you know, sitting on the sidelines waiting for their perfect property. They've got it in their head of what they want to have. when the property they're going to keep forever. But do you see a lot of guys that are able to just buy what's available now, fix it up, own it for a year, 2 years, maybe a few years, enjoy it in the meantime, and then sell it for a profit, roll that into another piece of property?
Absolutely. And if that's the route that an investor is going to take, I always recommend that they use a 1031 exchange to do so. What that does, it allows you to transfer all the profit and your equity, your cost basis, everything into the next property, to where you kind of keep that snowball rolling, keep building that nest egg, and then eventually you can leave that for your family, or you can cash out years down the road, but you haven't paid capital gains taxes along the road, which would have set you back a few steps. You've made money on those tax savings along the way. And all the people that I know that have built the most wealth in land, especially rural land, have utilized those in every manner possible, both forward 1031 exchanges, reverses, anything they can do to stop from paying taxes on that profit.
All right, Clint, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be continuing to talk about how to sell land and make money.
If you own a business in Alabama and want to reach the outdoors market with advertising on Alabama's Great Days Outdoor Radio Show, call 877-314-1237. Our show reaches all over Alabama, and your message will reach your targeted market. Radio ads can be combined with ads in Great Days Outdoors magazine and reach an even larger audience. Call 877-314-1237 to get all the details. That's 877-314-1237, or visit greatdaysoutdoors.com today.
Dolphin Island Marina at the foot of the Dolphin Island Bridge is situated conveniently between the Intercoastal Waterway and Mobile Bay. Wet and dry slips are available at this 235-slip marina with all the amenities you need. Kayak, paddleboard, and pontoon boat rentals are available, as well as a restaurant and South Mobile County's best live bait shop. Dolphin Island Marina is a great starting point for your vacation adventure, whether coastal cruising or fishing, from your boat or with one of their professional charter captains. You'll find it all at Dolphin Island Marina on Dolphin Island at the foot of the bridge.
Great Days Outdoors magazine is Alabama's leader in hunting and fishing information. Each month, you'll see a variety of articles from small game to big game, hunting and fishing. They even have game and fish recipes each month. Learn the latest tactics for hunting and fishing. From polywogs to gator trout, they've covered your outdoors for over 20 years. Specializing in how-to articles written by the best Alabama writers. Whatever your game, include Great Days Outdoors in your strategy. Subscribe online at greatdaysoutdoors.com and visit them on Facebook.
This is Alabama's Great Days Outdoors, brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Here's your host, Joe Baia.
And we're back. Today we are talking with Clint Flowers of National Land Realty. And Clint, before we took a break, we were talking about how to sell land, but really it's how to own land, how to buy land, and be able to make money, because it all plays in every stage of it. So, looking forward to continuing that discussion with you. Before we took a break, we were talking a little bit about 1031 exchanges and the importance of sheltering any profits that you're making from taxes.
Yeah, that's a big factor that people don't consider many times. If you jump into a piece of land, and let's say you're lucky, you fix it up, you sell it quickly, before you've owned it a year and a day, you know, you pay potentially a higher rate on that profit than you would had you held it long term, because after you own it a year, you're subject only to long term capital gains, which can affect, you know, really how much money you take home from this investment. But there's a lot of people, like we talked about, that want to keep carrying this forward to the next track, to the next track, to the next track, and that may be for true investment purposes, you know, from retirement, kids' college funds, or just I want to own what I can own now, but I know that I want to grow it into, I want to start with 40 acres and grow it into 1,000. You know, whatever your mindset is, if it's based around growth, then 1031 exchanges are a great tool to utilize to do that. And it is important to point out that this is not tax avoidance. It's you're deferring those taxes into the future.
Right.
What that allows you to do is make money on those savings in the interim. But it's a wonderful tool.
Well, there's a lot of things that land offers that other asset classes don't offer when it comes to taxes, and it comes to really long-term gains that you're able to make. So, you know, back to what we're talking about is what's that investor's goal? Is it a short-term gain? Is it a long-term gain? So let's talk about long-term gains a little bit. What are some of the things that, that folks can use land for? Why would they want to buy land, or how can they make money selling their land when we're thinking about long-term gains?
That is a long-term investment in and of itself day to day. Okay. That's the design of it. It's stable. It's reliable. It's easy to track, and the trees are growing. It doesn't matter what's going on in the political world and the stock market, anything, those trees are growing. So as long as you've got a good site that's well stocked, properly managed, it's growing just in pure weight every day.
Well, Clint, you know, you're talking about those trees growing really every day. Obviously, what are we talking about? 4 to 6% growth each year in general?
Yeah, just off of pure size and weight of the tree itself, not the value of the product that in the product class that it's in, but that's pretty standard for an annual growth rate that I see.
So I think one of the interesting things we talk about making money off of land, you know, we're talking about timberland here, is that there's some interesting things that go on with basis, the basis that you have in a piece of property. So explain that to me.
Yeah. And that also applies back to that annual return, because that growth of the tree is just one part of the annual growth, because each year you get a portion of that stand that grows into either more of the product class that it's in, or if it goes through product change, you can see double-digit returns in 1 to 3 years very quickly. And in the right location, right markets, it could be more than that. It could be triple digits. So the actual growth rate of the tree itself is just the one part of the growth, and then the value of that product that it's in is the second part, and you combine those for an annualized growth.
Now that's back to like what we were talking about with John Ross Havard, of going from, say, you know, pulp wood to saw timber,
right,
or saw timber to poles. You know, you can see those growths. But when we talk about basis, how does basis affect taxes?
So if you buy a tract of land that's got, say, you paid $2,000 an acre for it, and you determine that at the date of closing, and you do this through a forester, doesn't necessarily have to be for a formal cruise. Those are helpful, but not always required. It can just be an opinion. Let's just say you determine that at closing of that $2,000 an acre, it had $1,000 an acre in timber value. What that means is that you can take $1,000 in income from that timber and pay no taxes, because it's not a gain. It's a recovery of capital, where you basically converted $1,000 in value from a standing tree form into a liquid form. There was no gain. It was just a conversion. And you can do that over time. And then there are certain activities that you can do with timberland and add back to that basis, like site prep and planning, or even mileage to the track, and certain activities with, you know, installing fire lanes, management activities, that you can either add back to your basis, or you can write them off, capitalize them in the year of the expense. It's really just up to you how you want to treat those. So those are, you know, a lot of the tax advantages to timberland that people don't realize are out there. And when you combine those with other approaches to investment value, it really pays off. Joe, one other thing I would like to point out before we move on about timber sales is that on top of that basis depletion, as long as you've owned the property over a year and a day, any other timber sale that is a gain is taxed at long-term capital gains, as opposed to ordinary income rates, the way that rental property and rental income would be. And when I say rental income, that also includes ag land. So in short, agricultural rents and income related to that are taxed differently than timber sale income. And it's important to keep that in mind when you're analyzing a land investment.
Well, like you said, there's a lot to learn, a lot to know. That's one of the reasons why you definitely need to work with a land professional when it comes time to sell. And if you're going to buy, I mean, really, you need to talk with someone who's been through this before and understands all the different ways you can make money. But when it comes time to sell, really, what do people really need to be thinking about to make sure they're getting the most they can for their property?
Maximum exposure and properly pricing a tract are the probably the two most paramount points that I can give people. I see a lot of sellers that want to, you know, have this inflated price and say, well, you know, people make us an offer and, you know, we'll just put in this 30% negotiating room and wait for those offers. Well, in reality, in my experience, the truly qualified buyers, they're good, respectful people, and they're not the types that are going to come in and take potshot offers at tracks. They just don't make them at all. Because they don't want to offend the sellers. They just move on and look for a more accurately priced track. So my advice is always to price aggressively and negotiate less as opposed to putting big prices on tracks and hope to negotiate more within this wide window of cushion.
What about you talked a lot about taxes, and do you recommend that folks get with a tax professional when it comes time to sell, or really just anyone that owns land?
Absolutely. You know, anything I've said here is through my experience as a broker and a landowner myself, and you know, you should consult with your tax professional on anything that we discuss here today. But it's been an arena I've been running around in for a long time now.
Well, Clint, you talked about exposure being really important when it comes time to sell your land. So let's talk a little bit about that. What's the most important thing when it comes to marketing these properties?
Really, to get it out there in front of as many people as possible in the shortest amount of time. Time is money, and we try to be as time and cost effective as possible for people. And in today's world, that starts with the internet. I think the latest stat that we track down on this was that 92% of people start their land search online. So that's where we focus most of our marketing efforts these days. And that includes social media all the way through. And we still do a lot of print ad. We still do a lot of expos. We still do, you know, all of the traditional things, but we also try to look into the future and see the disruptors that are coming and see around the corner, if you will, so that we can remain at the forefront of the market when it comes to advertising land.
Well, Clint, there's a lot more here than we can cover in a radio show. We're going to have you back on at some point, but if folks want to get an idea of how much their land is worth and get an opinion of value from you, how can they reach you?
Give us a call at the office at 855-NLR-LAND. Email me at cflowers@nationalland.com or just find us on nationalland.com.
All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up this week. Thanks for tuning in. We know you can't always listen on the radio, but you can always listen online. If you would like us to email you the new show each week, just head over to greatdaysoutdoors.com/ASFR and we'll send you the new show as soon as it's available. Thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you next week.